Hello and welcome to the 538 Politics Podcast. I'm Micah Cohen and we're here with a special emergency edition of the show to talk about House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's decision to launch a formal impeachment inquiry. I put a note in the notes here to pause for historical moment appreciation. So if you guys have any...
Hold your horses. I'm not sure it's a historical moment at all.
Oh okay, my God. Okay, okay, we're already there. Like, that voice you hear already counter hot taking is Nate Siver, editor-in-chief.
Hello, everyone.
And also with us is...
Thanks.
Also with us is Claire Malone, senior writer. Hi, Claire.
Hi, Micah.
Okay, so the primary subject of the maybe historic, maybe not historic, impeachment inquiry seems to be whether President Trump pressured Ukraine's president to investigate former Vice President Joe Biden and his son Hunter. Secondly, whether he withheld military aid to Ukraine and made it contingent on Ukraine launching a Biden probe. I said seems to be there because we'll get into what's covered by this impeachment inquiry and what the inquiry actually is. But first, we were here, guys, just a little over 24 hours ago, and we talked about how impeachment seemed like a real possibility now, but it happened super quickly. What happened? What changed? Or why did
24 hours ago?
Why did
we were debating on Sunday whether to even have a segment about whistleblower?
Not on Sunday. Earlier than that, before okay. we got yeah, the like details. Friday. Yeah,
yeah.
But why did the snowball, Nate?
I'm not sure it snowballed.
Okay.
Well,
hold on.
This is important. This is important. Pelosi, yeah, she has a statement. I was getting a haircut, so I wasn't there in real time, right? But I read on the or saw it on the subway.
Hair looks good.
Thank you. And for the first 30 seconds, it's like this Ukraine stuff is really bad, and it's time to finally launch an impeachment investigation. And now we're going to have committees do a bunch of stuff, right? I'm like, what?
Well, hold
on. Yeah.
And if you read reports of Democrats coming out of the meeting she had with her caucus, they're confused as to what this actually means and what has actually changed. Clearly, a lot of Democrats came out for impeachment, and clearly,
we got to back up and explain to people.
So say, we can do that. Say that.
I think we need to back up and explain a little bit about how we got from yesterday to today, though. Right? Like, what changed overnight, basically. Literally.
So walk through that.
So last night, a op-ed was published in the Washington Post from what everyone's calling, I guess now, the National Security Democrats. So basically people who are more moderate, who were on the fence about impeachment and who said if Trump did what it seems like he might have done, we're for impeachment.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's one tick down. Then you've got, I believe this morning, although it's been an extremely long day.
I think it was this morning.
Elizabeth Warren calling for impeachment. Biden giving a televised sort of formal statement saying essentially, he's for impeachment. Blue Dog Democrats coming out and issuing statements saying they're for impeachment. So there was a, I would say, quite a acceleration, you know, from yesterday evening through this morning or midday.
Yeah. And this is where I think, Nate, I would push back on your skepticism a little bit, although it's warranted.
I mean, maybe I'm too caught up in the last 45 minutes versus the last day. Clearly, there's been a lot of movement over the past 24 to 48 hours. You know, was Pelosi's announcement the climactic call for an impeachment trial as opposed to an impeachment investigation? No. And the difference, I would say, is that, you know, she is saying, hey, six committees, I'll kind of come up and give me your best arguments for impeachment. I'll put it like this, right? We encourage people to be Bayesians here at 538.
I put the
Bay. And again,
in
this
Bayesian.
Is not our 5:54 p.m. podcast. I'm recording this. It's our podcast for the day, right? If Pelosi was hedging her bets on impeachment, then how would she do it? Probably a lot like this, right? If Pelosi was like, we finally got Trump on Ukraine, the details are really bad, and we know it for sure, then I think you would have had a more surgical message.
So let me just pop in here and provide a little bit of timeline context, because I take Nate's point that it's sort of, Mike and I kind of watched the Pelosi statement together, and afterwards, my big question was, okay, so like what happens now?
Well, yeah.
All right. And Steve Kornacki, tweeted this right around that time and said, basically laid out a timeline for the, House Republicans moving to impeach Clinton in 1998. The timeline was early October, full House vote to open inquiry. Late November, early December, judiciary hearings. December 19th, House votes to impeach. February 12th, 1999, Senate acquits. So,
and so what I think is important about that timeline, one is it sort of didn't last that long.
Right.
But two is the first item in that timeline was full House vote to open inquiry, right?
Right.
And we're not there yet.
Right.
And I think to Nate's point, it's like the way Pelosi has gone about this, it's not like there's this new impeachment vehicle that now gets rolled out of the garage and it has all these new features. I think actually one way to describe what happened today was Pelosi now supports an impeachment inquiry.
Right.
Which I think is a big deal, but it's
I agree.
Not.
And just one more fact before Nate lets you have it back. this is from the New York Times from today, explaining the six committees and eventually kicking findings to the Judiciary Committee. It says, quote, the decision to begin a formal impeachment inquiry does not necessarily mean that the House will ultimately vote to charge Mr. Trump with high crimes and misdemeanors. So just caveat.
So okay, Nick, with those caveats, isn't the fact that Pelosi sort of capping off this groundswell now supports an impeachment inquiry, isn't that a big deal?
I mean, some would say there was an impeachment inquiry underway already, and then it's just a change of semantics.
And yet semantics are so important in all of these things as we
But that's what I'm saying, like the ambiguity about like that Pelosi provided that might not be picked up by the average voter. But that is kind of signaling to other influential Democrats that, like, the horse isn't quite out of the barn.
Right,
yet.
But I think
the door is open, but we're still monitoring the horse.
What I think it's, but I don't want us to be. I think we can often be. I don't want to be too cute by half and be too okay. This is, you know, let's pull back. This does mark a certain. I don't know if it's the crossing of the Rubicon that everyone's saying, but it is obviously. It's a for lack of a better word, it's a moment on TV, right? It's a moment that people will play the clip. There's a visible statement and kind of agenda setting that's been done.
Nate, the headline on the New York Times right now is Pelosi announces impeachment inquiry, big type, right? That is going to be whether there are like still these off ramps. Headline on Washington Post, big type. Pelosi announces formal impeachment inquiry of Trump. Whether there are still these off-ramps, whether she's still hedging her bets, I think this will permeate to the extent where if you asked the average voter, they'd probably say, oh yeah, Democrats are impeaching Trump, wouldn't they?
Yes. Yes. I think that's what people would take away.
One thing that Nancy Pelosi may be interested in is the polls.
Yeah.
She would like to see, because there are two developments. And to be honest, they're going to be very hard to separate when we look at before and after on impeachment, right? One is this new set of accusations about Ukraine, which, as we talked about, was it yesterday? Seems like longer than that ago.
Yeah.
Are in some ways more understandable by the public. Mm-hmm. Two is that you now have a lot of Democrats that weren't for impeachment before saying we're for impeachment or impeachment-ish. And those could both move the numbers among people in the polls, probably the latter more among Democrats, the former maybe more among everyone. But let's put it like this. What's the baseline? You know, impeachment's been at around 35% in the most recent polls. If it's at 40 next week, well, 40 is actually kind of a complicated case. If it's still at 36 next week, then okay.
Right.
Y'all can do what you want, Democrats, but, you know, you can lose elections because you're stubborn and don't pay attention to public opinion. If numbers are at 47% next week, then Pelosi might be much more eager. And so I'm not saying it's like not a smart play, but it is hedging risk. And I think it's hedging risk in a way that, like, as reporters or as, like, Democrats on the Hill, that you actually do have to kind of be too cute by half and listen to that, like, the parsing that Pelosi has, because it is almost like an encoded message.
Well, I do wonder a little bit, though, if Pelosi is trying to hedge the risk here, but if it's sort of naive to expect that building in off-ramps into this process will, one, work, or two, be picked up on by the public.
And we should note that Trump's reaction and the Trump campaign's reaction have been perhaps predictable. The campaign released a ad that looked like it had been kind of queued up that said, you know, the Democrats are just out to impeach Trump while he's trying to work for you. And Trump himself tweeted in rapid succession, Pelosi, Nadler, Schiff, and of course, Maxine Waters, can you believe this? New tweet. They never even saw a transcript of the call, a total witch hunt. And then finally, in a standalone tweet, all capital letters, presidential harassment.
I was actually a little surprised that they didn't wait for the transcript. Although, let's come back to the transcript in a second, because I think that's interesting. We'll talk about that. I want to kind of go through what are the next steps here and what you guys will be watching for. But, Nate, can we go back to the polling for a second?
Yeah.
YouGov released a poll today, I think, that asked people if President Donald Trump suspended military aid to Ukraine in order to incentivize the country's officials to investigate his political rival, Joe Biden, and his son, would you support or oppose impeachment? Right? Yeah. So it's if the kind of Ukraine story is bared out.
Would that it were.
Right. Okay. So among all U.S. adults, 55% either strongly support or somewhat support. Most, 44% strongly support. Right?
26% oppose.
26% oppose. That sort of mirrors Trump's approval-disapproval rating, right? Where the-
Well, worse than that. But I think people are... So, in researching this afternoon's article on, on impeachment polling, I got a lot of hits for polls that said, if hypothetical condition X happens, would you support impeachment? And those numbers are often pretty high, right? The question is, A, that what happened?
Right.
And B, how people feel differently when the facts are spun by Republicans and other people instead of presented as kind of fairly clean hypothetical. You know, and there's also a question of like, okay, there's circumstantial evidence that Trump did this, but it can't be proven in a particularly convincing way. So
you look at those numbers and you're like, oh, that's actually not that reassuring for Democrats, because this is like the cleanest it's going to get.
Well, one problem is we didn't get a clean test of this in all the Mueller Russia stuff, because like, you know, Mueller was not the worst version of Mueller that it could have been for Trump. It was not the second worst version. It was maybe a 4.5 or a 5 out of 10 or something, right? And so we kind of never quite got this like clean test of what happens when you really do have like a
8 out of 10,
proverbial
9
straw,
out of 10.
You know, breaking the camel's back, or 8 out of 10 on the impeachment Richter scale.
Okay, so let's go quickly to what else could and might happen this week and what you guys are going to be watching for. So we'll sort of do this in rapid fire. First, Trump is going to release, he says, a redacted transcript of the call with the Ukrainian president Wednesday. Yeah, it is released that Wednesday. What are you guys watching for there, Claire?
So, Mike, you said a couple of minutes ago that you were surprised that Democrats didn't wait until the transcript was out. And I think if you pay, I mean, maybe Nate is right that Pelosi did kind of have a very carefully worded statement, and I would almost say it was bifurcated, right? The first part addressed this call, the whistleblower report, and she basically said if the Director of National Intelligence chooses not to testify comprehensively on Thursday, he will be breaking the law. Okay, that was one part of the speech. But then she moved on and said, basically, separate from that, Donald Trump has, by his own admission, you know, asked for these things from the Ukraine, and that is a crime, and that is an impeachable offense, and that is why we're pursuing this. So she did kind of carve out reasoning for exactly what you just said, which is, why didn't she wait until the call? And that is interesting, though. It's like a, I guess it's almost a preemptive attack on Trump, saying, like, no matter what's, it's almost the Democrats saying, no matter what's in that transcript, which we don't know.
Right.
This is about the full thing. It's about the suppression of the whistleblower report, yes, but also about the fact that Trump, you've admitted that you did this thing, and it's almost like we've got you in the public record almost.
Well, but I do think it is potentially problematic for Democrats
if the transcript is somehow like exculpatory or something, in some way like lame
or even not damning, yeah. Like to say something really obvious but sort of important, the simpler this story was and the more kind of self-evident it was in documentary evidence, the easier the case is for Democrats. And so if like the transcript paints a different picture, even if that picture is sort of like you're looking at only one part of it, that's not a great first step for them in their new impeachment inquiry, I don't think.
Yeah, and obviously if Trump has a lot of pieces of chum he can throw into the water, he's
exactly.
going to pick one that, I don't know, right? What is interesting is that the Senate, including Senate Republicans, do not seem inclined to make it hard for everyone to read what the whistleblower said, right? There was a unanimous consent vote in the Senate to allow that.
So, okay. So the
there are like 13 things happening at once.
Yeah, I actually didn't say that. So does it seem like Democrats want that whistleblower complaint, the original whistleblower complaint that started all this.
And the whistleblower has said he wants to testify.
Yeah, and that person apparently wants to testify. Do we know it's a he? I think I saw a he too.
Here's my implicit
sexism.
Gender. Yeah, totally.
In any case, in addition to this transcript, we could potentially get the actual whistleblower complaint, testimony from the Director of National Intelligence about that complaint, and potentially testimony from the Inspector General of the intelligence community about that complaint. In all that, this is maybe a stupid question, like what are you looking for? You're sort of looking for what it says, right? What they say.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's also tied up in all of this is whether or not the executive branch respects Congress as a co-equal branch, right? The idea that they are the Director of National Intelligence of the executive branch is potentially refusing basically a demand by Congress that they appear. That is what Pelosi is referring to, and that's potential criminality, the refusal to come before the committee and testify to the full extent.
Show them the complaint.
Right.
Right.
I think that's a sort of like an interesting, not interesting, it's a big, it's quite a...
No, it's at the nut of this sort of.
Correct,
and
yeah.
I should say, this was a sense of the Senate resolution, which means it's non-binding. It was a Senate saying that the IG, the intelligence community, should be transmitted to the intelligence committee immediately. So it's kind of McConnell signaling, I think, to the White House, like, don't screw with Congress's authority too much, because although I'm sure I'll have your back in many, many other ways, right, if you refuse to provide basic information that affects national security and other things to the Senate, then that's going to be a problem.
Yeah, and I think that'll be an interesting thing to see how this plays out, is how much of the wrongdoing that Democrats are accusing Trump and the administration of is about process, which is important. In other words, there is this law that says, hey, you have to forward this whistleblower complaint on to Congress, and they haven't done that. And how much is about the president allegedly asking a foreign leader to interfere in the U.S. election? The more it's about the latter, the sort of, I think, the more it becomes possible that the public opinion moves on impeachment. Let's zoom all the way out here and talk about long term. Now that this sort of ship has sailed, that's not the right expression, but now that the impeachment vehicle, to go back to our previous metaphor, is you know, out of the garage, even if it has already been out of the garage, coming up in this process could potentially be, okay, the committees will now work to draft articles of impeachment. Then there will be a potential House vote on
said articles.
On, well, it's a, but part of what's a little confusing is, does there still have to be a House vote on opening an impeachment inquiry?
Yes, there does.
Right?
So I think it's that. I think that comes first, opening the impeachment.
And then they're like, okay, how compelling are these articles of impeachment?
And then you
if they're compelling, let's open it.
And then you'd have the formal hearings.
Then you'd have the hearings, right? But that eventually, this is going to have to or might make its way to the Senate, which is controlled by the Republicans. So let's just talk about that for a second. One big argument against impeachment all along has been Mitch McConnell will never vote to remove Trump from office. Has that changed? How do you guys look at the Senate's role in all this still?
There is longstanding precedent that once the House, let's say, hypothetically votes to impeach, that it would move to the Senate for a trial. So this is from our friends at Lawfare. They did a post on this about whether or not the Senate can decline to try an impeachment case. And they said it's also possible that in this time of disregard and erosion of established institutional practices and norms, the current leadership of the Senate could choose to abrogate them once more. So basically saying Mitch McConnell, who has taken sort of, unprecedented in some ways, maneuverings in the Senate, this could be a thing that he does, which is to prevent a trial of impeachment for Trump in the Senate.
If impeachment made it out of the House, am I wrong in thinking that McConnell, as long as removing from Trump from office remains unlikely, it seems like for Democrats, McConnell refusing to even hold a trial would kind of be a best case outcome for them, right? Because then they have sort of satisfied their base. They've held this inquiry. They've churned up a lot of dirt on Trump, you would imagine. And yet, Trump is not sort of acquitted and is not, quote unquote, exonerated. And you can tag, congressional Republicans with obstruction,
Yeah, like how powerless does Mitch McConnell feel?
Exactly, right. Maybe that's good for Democrats if McConnell stonewalls it. I don't know. Let's leave that alone. I have no idea what he would do.
In the end, and people hate me when I say this, right? But in the end, it comes down to public opinion.
I would actually go a step farther than that and say, I feel like, I think you got at this, Nate, when you said like the Russia thing was a 4 or 5 and we might get hate mail for this too. But it sort of comes down to the facts on the ground, actually. Yeah. If this Ukraine story is as bad as it seemed, on Monday, yesterday, then I think this thing will go pretty far. If it's more muddled, like you were saying, Nate, then it'll probably peter out.
I think there's a game where we try to infer what people know about the story based on how they're acting. In weird ways, Republicans are actually acting a little bit cowed, right? Mitt Romney has said, I don't know, this kind of doesn't look great, right? And just the comments have been less partisan than usual, a little bit more hedged, right? And we don't know. A lot of Democrats, apparently without Pelosi really whipping in either direction, although I think she's clearly aware of some of what's going on.
Yeah.
Like, came out in favor of it. So I don't know. Maybe they do have. Clearly it would be like if it's a 2 out of 10 and there's some exculpatory evidence for Trump, it's clearly a classic fuck up of the first order by Democrats. Like, potentially, I don't want to go too far. But it's the kind of thing that would maybe hurt their chances of defeating Trump.
Well, that's why I would push back a little bit on your poo-pooing this as a big story, is there seems like there's huge risks to Democrats here and huge risks to Trump. But I'm going to give myself the last word there,
okay.
Nate.
Okay.
Host prerogative. Let's leave it there. Thank you, Nate.
Okay. Thank you, Micah.
Thank you, Claire.
Thanks, Micah.
My name is Micah Cohen. Tony Chow is in the control room. Our intern is Jake Arlo. You can get in touch with us by emailing podcast@538.com. You can also, of course, tweet at us with questions or comments. If you're a fan of the show, leave us a rating or a review in the Apple Podcast Store or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, tell someone about us. Recommend us to a friend. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you soon.